Thank you very much. Thank you, Remy, for inviting me. So what I'm going to do is to show a few examples of research and also some mitigation experiences in low-income countries, experiences in which I'm involved. So first of all, I will start with this story of salinity in Bangladesh. For a couple of reasons. One is because we conducted research in Bangladesh already 12 years ago and in the following years, and we identified a problem that had not been identified before. And then because now we are trying to tackle it, to tackle the problem with an intervention. So, how is the story? The story is that first, Bangladesh is a kind of experimental country from the point of view of climate change, because a lot of changes are taking place, and the impact on the population's health is considerable. Most of my presentation is about health, and once again, following Jessica's presentation on co-benefits. So, Bangladesh is paradoxical from a certain point of view, because it is affected by floods very often. The frequency and intensity of floods is changing because of climate change. But in the meantime, people have to go to wells, for example, to pumps, to procure fresh water. And this is basically on the shoulders of women. There is a big disproportion between the impact of climate change on women and on men in Bangladesh. So what we discovered, thanks to a PhD student of mine, Anira Khan, about 12 years ago, was that drinking water in a large area in Bangladesh along the coast, involving many hundreds, thousands of people, was salty. There was much salt in drinking water. For a number of reasons that include the sea level rise, which is low but obviously cumulative, the lower flow of fresh water from the big rivers coming from Himalaya, and this is due to the melting of Himalaya glaciers, and also changes in the frequency and intensity of monsoons, and the development of shrimp farming that keeps brackish water into the land. So all those forces lead to salinization of water that affects hundreds of thousands, or perhaps millions of people in the coastal area. And what Anira Khan discovered was that there was a high prevalence of preeclampsia and hypertension in pregnant women in a hospital in coastal Bangladesh. This was the first paper we published many years ago in The Lancet. And then a few other papers came showing that there was an association between salty water drinking and hypertension in the general population, not only pregnant women. And this is likely to be a problem in other areas of the world. So it is probable that many millions of people are exposed to salinity through drinking water because of similar or slightly different mechanisms compared to those I have shown. So this was, in a way, an unexpected impact of climate change we observed in Bangladesh. And I will come back to this showing what we intend to do in terms of adaptation and mitigation. Then a second topic I will address briefly is biodiversity. Not from the point of view of, well, what we have heard already, This is a recent paper where also a former collaborator of mine is involved, Chris Murray, who is currently in the Gambia. So I'm not addressing biodiversity as such, but particular angle concerning biodiversity. So this picture just shows the fact that the urbanization process and the progressive intrusion of the human species into forests creates an intermediate area called the ecotone, where you increase the likelihood of spillovers because of the proximity between bats, rodents, animals which are bred in agriculture and the urban spaces. But the point I want to make is that you can also look at biodiversity from a completely different point of view, and this has to do with co-benefits. What we did in the same study that was presented by Jessica, which is this EPIC, was to look at food biodiversity, that is the diversity in the species that are eaten by people, either vegetables or animals. So the variety of species. So we reclassified the same dietary data used by Jessica for co-benefits. We reclassified them in terms of variety of species eaten, vegetables or animals. And we came up with a quite interesting result, which refers to approximately to 500,000 Europeans. That is an increasing index of biodiversity, dietary biodiversity, was associated with decreasing mortality, down to about 60%, with a linear relationship. Well, there are several explanations. I think this is the first paper that has been published on this topic. There were a few smaller papers before. What are the potential explanations? Well, probably the most likely is that different species or a broad variety of species increases complementarity in terms of micronutrients. So it is more likely that your intake of micronutrients, elements, and so on, is greater if you have a large variety of species, which is not simply having a varied dietary habits, but just a variety of species. So this leads us once again to stressing the importance of diet and agriculture, as was already very well described by Jessica. This is a tool we have developed at Imperial College on the right by several people, not only at Imperial College, led by the Center for Environmental Policy, Jen Woods and others. It is called Global Calculator. You can find it in the web. And it is quite useful because you can introduce your data about several sectors or behaviors, like transportation, diet, housing, insulation of houses, whatever, energy use, and so on. And the calculator, through a series of algorithms, gives you the increase in temperature that corresponds to the different scenarios. There are also some already previous scenarios, like Friends of the Earth, the International Energy Association, and so on. And depending on the scenario, you will see how much greenhouse gas emissions will increase and how much temperature will increase. On the left, you see an application of the global calculator. You can make many different assumptions. But it shows that, as I said, diet and agriculture have quite an important impact, together, of course, with the energy transition. Now I want to show just a couple of experiences of, let's say, mitigation, but with a component of co-benefits. And the focus for the first experience is on Africa, because Africa is really crucial for the next years and decades. There are multiple burdens, viruses, food crisis, climate poverty. For example, Africa is very much dependent on cereals from Russia and Ukraine. Or from another point of view, COVID has had a very strong impact on Africa in terms of, for example, of price increases. In general, the value chain of agriculture and food, interruption of value chains, which led to an increase of people in poverty in Africa related to COVID, but we do not have updated numbers about that yet. So the first experience I'm going to describe is in Kenya. It is conducted by an organization which is called the Farm Shine, which is a part of a foundation, the Regenerative Society Foundation, which is a foundation founded by Jeffrey Sachs plus a number of Italian industrialists, first of all Illy. And the idea of this Farm Shine is to tackle some of the key problems in Africa, in Kenya, particularly related to food production. Problems which refer to the market, like lack of access to formal markets. There is a lot of informal markets. Unfairness in price formation, high levels of debts, limited logistic and supply chain services, complex bureaucracy and corruption, lack of comprehensive certification for let's say, mitigation initiatives. Then there are problems in the environment. There is a tendency to apply an extractive subsistence agriculture driven by poverty, extractive in the sense that, for example, it is based on a large amount of fertilizers sometimes. There is an improper use of chemicals and fertilizers, and in addition, there are climate shocks. Finally, there are social problems like limited access to education and health services, lack of basic infrastructure like water storage, limited access to technology and innovation, and lack of access to adequate financial services. So this Farm Shine and the Regenerative Society Foundation wanted to tackle some of these problems with a kind of integrated, holistic approach, which is very much based on the idea of co-benefits. So we developed a measurement framework to measure the impact of a different way of farming, where we refer to several axes, which include climate mitigation, circularity, tackling loss of biodiversity, but also well-being and health of the people, so that you can evaluate single experiences like the one in Kenya or others. There are also several industries in Italy trying to do the same, that is use the measurement framework to build a comprehensive overall evaluation of how they are reaching, for example, the Paris Agreement goals, but also other goals in terms of biodiversity and well-being. So in the case of Kenya, the key outcomes are expected to be healthier soils through improved soil fertility and increased carbon sequestration, for example, by reducing or avoiding tillage. Agricultural diversification, which is supposed to have a good impact on the soil, but also on nutrition of the clients in Nairobi, for example. Wealthier families, the idea is to create a business plan that increases the income of the families. In general, healthier society members, and access to finance, for example, microfinances. Right, so the expected results and the impact refer to about 1,000 communities in the area. Well, I will not go through the whole list of expected results, which are evaluated with the measurement framework. But the idea is to use the logic of co-benefits, that is to have both improvement of health among the farmers and in the population which is served by those farmers with improved nutrition, and an impact on the environment, for example, through carbon sequestration. This is the first example. The second example is a new center we have set up at Imperial College, which is funded by the UK government through the NIHR scheme, led by Chris Millett. And this center has the aim of addressing three problems in three low-income countries. One is diet and food in India. I would say very much along the lines explained by Jessica, but of course adapting the food, certainly not the Eat Lancet recipe, something different, but we will create a food basket which has the purpose of avoiding a transition in India towards a Western diet, making the most of the local traditional diet, which very often is vegetarian, and improving the health, but also improving the environmental impact, making this food also available from an economic point of view. The second country will be Bangladesh, where we want to mitigate the impact of salinization. I refer to hypertension, but of course hypertension means also cardiovascular diseases. So we will provide, we will experiment. All of these interventions are in fact quasi-experimental. And we will experiment different ways to provide fresh water, non-salinized water. And the third country is Indonesia, where there is a huge problem of burning plastics, which leads to a lot of air pollution. So it is once again a co-benefit example, because by reducing the burning of plastics, and with better improved ways to get rid of plastics, there will be a reduction in air pollution, improvement of the health of children and adults, and less contribution to climate change and less environmental degradation. So these are the examples of mitigations based on the principle of co-benefits we are currently setting up. Thank you.